You're listening to Serious Inquiries Only.
Hello and welcome to Serious Inquiries Only. This is episode 209 and it's me. So Jamie didn't quite have enough time to do a bonus one. I wanted to do an extra episode, and I no fault of Jamie's. She has stuff to do, and it's just easier rather than trying to find another time to schedule. It'll actually be easier for me to tackle a few questions that were more just for me or voicemail that actually you'll see. I have a couple voicemail that I wanted to just play and on their own, and like there's no need to comment because they say great stuff and they have voices that are not mine that I want to platform. So that's a perfect thing to play when Jamie's unable to make it, because we weren't going to comment too much on them anyway. We're just going to kind of let them stand. So I'm going to do that. I'm going to tackle a few questions that are more specific to me because I just want to make sure we touch on so many of these great messages and emails and stuff that I am getting. So here goes. It's a bonus episode. Sorry that Jamie's not here. I miss her probably more than you guys do. I love recording with Jamie, and she loves doing it as well. But schedule-wise, this is just going to be much easier. So why don't we start off with a voice message from Ari? Here we go.
Hi, Thomas and Jamie. This is Ari, and I am calling in, or I guess recording in, about your episode about ContraPoints and the things that she said on Twitter and so-called cancel culture. First, I wanted to say that I appreciate the way that you handled the topic as far as not really making a strong stance one way or the other, as far as whether her feelings or opinions were correct or deserved the ire that they got or anything like that. I was really conflicted about the way that you handled it at first, because I was hoping to hear cis allies come out very strongly against what she said as being harmful to non-binary people. But then as I heard more of the episode and thought about it more, I realized that I would rather not set up a system where cis people are calling out trans people for having wrong feelings or thoughts and invalidating their experiences, and that should be left up to the trans community. So because I am a certified non-binary TM, I am now here to tell you why what she said was really shitty and wrong. So caveat, I don't use Twitter. Hooray. I never have. So I didn't see this unfolding. I didn't see the comments that she got. All that I saw were screenshots of some of what she said, and probably not all of it. So I'm going based on that, and I'm not saying that all of the responses that she got were all correct. Like, I don't know if she got like death threats or something like that. I don't know. So I'm not commenting on that. So basically, from what I understand, what she said at first was that when she's in a group of people and they're introducing pronouns, she feels uncomfortable with that because as the only trans person there, it makes her feel othered. It makes her feel like they're doing it just for her and she just wants to be accepted. That opinion would be valid, but there are several things wrong with it. First of all, she's making the assumption that she's the only trans person there, which she doesn't know. You can't tell a trans person just by looking necessarily. So her assuming that she's the only trans person there and that's why they have to introduce pronouns is just false. It's incorrect. She doesn't know that she's the only trans person there. And there may be other people there who would benefit from having others know their pronouns up front. Just because they look a certain way doesn't mean that they're a certain gender or that the pronouns that you think they have are the ones that they actually have. So that's based on her old school assumption that you can tell trans people by looking, which isn't the case. And I think probably the more important part from a non-binary person's perspective is that when she says that non-binary people having to announce pronouns makes it harder for me as a binary trans person, what I hear as a non-binary person is I want to keep my privilege. I know that it might sound weird to refer to trans people as having privilege, but there are some ways that binary trans people do have privilege over non-binary people. And then vice versa, there are also ways that non-binary people have privilege over binary trans people. And one of the ways that binary people have privilege over non-binary people is that there is a chance that their pronouns will be correctly assumed. Whereas for most non-binary people, that is never going to happen. If we don't step up and say what our pronouns are, we will get misgendered, except in cases of non-binary people who do use binary pronouns, which exists. But I'd say most non-binary people either use they, them, or some form of neo-pronoun. So if we don't go around the circle and say what our pronouns are, nobody's going to gender us correctly. And what I hear her saying is, well, I look a certain way, so you should know what my pronouns are. And that's not a privilege that non-binary people get to have. So, like, if I were to talk to her about it, I'd say, like, I'm sorry that you're uncomfortable, but you gotta get over it. Like, you know, just because you're trans doesn't mean that you don't have to be uncomfortable to help people with even less privilege than you. Like, white people have to be uncomfortable when they confront racism. Like, sorry, that's just how it works. You got to be uncomfortable. I'm sorry. You got to get over it. Plus, that wasn't the only stuff she said. And she also said some pretty shitty and invalidating stuff towards non-binary people in general. And if you are going to claim to be an advocate for the trans community, you can't be doing that shit. That's fucked up. Yeah, I mean, that's my perspective as a non-binary person, and I could talk more about cancel culture and how I don't even think it's really a thing. I think it's a right-wing propaganda term, but I won't because I've already gone on for a very long time. So that's my perspective. I'm not speaking for all non-binary people, but I'm speaking for myself and what I believe the majority of non-binary people believe. And if you want to talk about this or other non-binary issues more, either on or off the air, hit me up. I would be glad to chat with you more. See ya.
Thanks so much, Ari. I really appreciate it. That's perfect. Can just let that stand. But we can also add, I got to Ari and asked them if they wanted to comment on Natalie's apology. So I'll get to that. I will say, though, quickly, I have heard from lots of trans people on this, and that's from, you know, let me see if I get the right terminology. So that's from binary and non-binary trans people. And I am really hearing a big diversity in views. I'm going to also read an email from a non-binary person I got that I thought was also really good. And this might just be one of those things where there's some tension here and we got to do our best. You know, we all have to do our best. I heard from binary trans people who talked about the struggle with dysphoria that they have when someone doesn't just use the pronouns that they want to have. And yeah, it's tough. I don't know what the answer is, but I wanted to present kind of everything I got or some good sources that I got. So thanks so much, Ari, for writing in. And so what should I do first? Let's see. Why don't I also read this email and then we'll get to ContraPoints' apology and stuff. So got an email. It was very long. I can't read the whole thing. Sorry for that. But I think I can read a good portion here. So this is from Nessie, who is non-binary, and they sent, like I said, a very long one, but I think this will be good. Hey, Thomas, a couple of deeper responses to your episode. The issue with Wynn and the non-binary community is a manifestation of a really old issue. She and I are nearly the same age. I think she's 1 year older than me, and we were both probably shaped by the same kinds of trans communities, but our experiences have been wildly different because she's binary and I'm not. It's part of the reason why I'm a trans elder in my non-binary communities at the tender age of 30. Older trans people did not want to include us because there was a perception that our confusing illegibility to cis people would harm their political efforts and that our visibility would create the very gender scrutiny that Wynn experiences now. And that is a legitimate thing for which I have great sympathy with Wynn, very similar to the way Luxander was talking about it. I was identifying non-binary way before I discovered the words for it. And my peers were some of the first to take those words that we discovered in academia onto Tumblr and have conversations about them, etc. I generally see all of the new words and new pronouns as a massive positive, given how many other genetic and biological factors we're learning are literally unique from person to person, why wouldn't it be the case that gender would be the same way? What two cis people do you know that have the same idea of what being a man or a woman means? Doesn't it stand to reason that a few of us would not be well served by those two concepts, even at their most flexible? But even given my regard for all the new words and ideas, and how positive I generally see all these developments, even I experience whiplash with how fast these changes have happened. And I also have been excluded, quote-unquote canceled, from very close friends and community spaces, of which I don't have many because I've argued against instances of Twitter dogpiling that really were just harassment with a paper-thin layer of righteous feeling over it as justification. That kind of exclusion and purity vetting has become extremely common in my communities, largely thanks to the rise of alt-right, etc. harassment tactics like raiding and infiltrating. So, you know, complicated situation. That said, because there's so much history here, inner trans history that I recognize is basically invisible to non-trans people, and I wouldn't expect you to know, but I do also wonder if it might not have been better to find someone else as an example, perhaps legitimately or not, but that's something worth considering. And I think it was particularly good decision to also bring up Ezra Klein and Ta-Nehisi Coates to broaden the conversation. I also think that the way these platforms are designed really can only encourage engagement that's very one note. Twitter is designed for dogpiling. Back before these platforms were so huge on the internet, where I encountered so many of those trans people that shaped me and that also probably either reflected / influenced the communities around Wynn, you could have longer conversations that really teased out nuances, which is critical to trans experience. We are less a single community and more a constellation of many communities who are loosely connected through experiences of exclusion. We have commonalities, but nothing for us is universal. Platforms like Facebook and Twitter do not lend themselves to that kind of experience. They're sort of designed for universality and the illusion that a couple of people can speak for a whole sub-populace. It isn't great. It contributes to why being transgender in public is a recipe for Nazi bait right now. And it also means that the conversations that desperately need to happen between non-binary and binary folks that this situation is kind of perfect for is now hijacked by the IDW, and that makes it so much harder to actually have such conversations. All right, I know that was long. Thanks for bearing with me. So that was about half the email, but it was very good. It was just so much good info there. Thank you so much to Nessie for that email. Just another non-binary perspective there. It's to my ear does kind of go along with what Ari is saying too. And I think in the first episode I did, the links I provided were probably more ContraPoints friendly non-binary sources. So definitely a diversity of views. But I'm glad to get two very good responses from my non-binary friends in Nessie and Ari there. So thank you so much for that. Now, the follow-up with Ari, I want to first read ContraPoints' apology. So here's an update on that situation. ContraPoints' Twitter became reactivated, and this was probably a week ago by now. It was a few days after the whole thing. It was maybe it might have been the next day or two after we recorded that episode. And it says, "Hi all, I deactivated my Twitter last week, intending to take a longer break than this, but since commentators, journalists, etc. have begun using my absence and silence as an opportunity to speak for me, I feel like I have to say something. My discomfort with gender-neutral language and explaining my pronouns does not outweigh the needs of other trans, non-binary, and gender non-conforming people. I regret expressing my feelings in a glib way that did not convey the importance of those needs. It saddens me that this mistake has been exploited by other public figures to attack a non-binary people, to attack non-binary people. Thank you to those of you who have criticized me in a measured way and a constructive way. I will try to do better. I have decided that Twitter is not a good platform for me, and I have turned this account over to my assistant, Gwen, who will manage it from now on. See you on YouTube and Instagram, Natalie." So, yeah, just for my part, when I said, like, what would be a good idea, this certainly to me is good. Like, this, I'm not talking about the apology, but just this course of action of having someone manage your Twitter. Like, that was one of two things. You can either just tweet out how you feel and largely ignore mentions, because it's just impossible once you're as popular as Natalie Wynn is on Twitter. I mean, it's just hard, especially as a trans woman, the amount of garbage you're going to get in your mentions. It's just, it's too much. I think maybe some people don't realize, like, especially for someone who has millions of followers, it's a full-time job times 1,000 to be able to meaningfully filter through all of the response that you're going to get. And it's not realistic to expect somebody to do that in the best of circumstances when they're not facing harassment, when they're not facing all these other challenges and certain maybe reasons that this would be really bad for their mental health. Like, even without that, it's impossible. And add that in and it's even more impossible. So I really think she's doing a good thing and just turning it over to somebody else. Alternatively, she could have still maintained it, but just not even read her mentions, you know. But in terms of the apology, I sought Ari's comment in that, and I will see what Ari has to say. So Ari said, "I think it's a decent apology for the most part, in that she doesn't deny responsibility or use 'sorry if you misinterpreted me and were offended' type rhetorical tactics. But we'll see if she actually learns or changes her views. I'm a little worried that she's not using Twitter anymore because she wants to avoid criticism. But again, I didn't see the whole thing unfold, and I don't know what kind of threatening messages she might have gotten. If she wants to be a trans advocate, she needs to be open to receiving criticism from fellow trans people about the messages she puts out. Hopefully she will be able to do that outside of Twitter. Overall, I still think what she said was harmful and wrong, and it remains to be seen if she will earn back the trust of non-binary folks and our allies." So there you go. There you have it. That's Ari's response that I was able to get over Facebook to ContraPoints' apology. So that catches us all up with this. That's what I have to say in terms of the practicality of dealing with Twitter and what Ari and Nessie had to say on all that. So that's good stuff. Thank you so much. I want to thank you again to Ari and Nessie and everybody else who wrote in on that and left voicemails. It's great stuff. So where should we go next? Well, along the lines of voicemails that mostly speak for themselves, here's another one. Really good voicemail from, she introduces herself here, so why don't I just play it?
Hey, Thomas. This is Highly Critical, formerly Gothic Intellect. And I just wanted to offer a few thoughts on the episode, Why No One Is Racist, According to Republicans. One day I was watching the PBS NewsHour where they were interviewing Trump supporters in Iowa, and they kept asking people whether or not they think Trump is racist after all of his documented shenanigans. And the main point that people kept making is that they were uncomfortable calling him a racist because they don't know his intention, as if being racist is only someone's intention instead of being their actions or their comments. And this is all just based on ignorance of American history, and specifically Black American history. A lot of these white people who love to argue that there's no way that they can be racist, they don't really understand all of the atrocities that Black people have gone through in this country. Another example, or I would say another thought I want to add to this, is that I had a conversation with a white liberal on Twitter who, you know, they voted for Clinton, they believe in liberal economic policies, but they are racist. And I tried to explain to them about reasons that Black people in America are not doing as well as white people, such as the school-to-prison pipeline, mass incarceration, etc. But he took me educating him on my own community's history as if I was insulting his intelligence. So it's almost as if he thinks that he knows everything about Black people without actually taking the time to learn about our community and our history. And it's just really frustrating that so many white people who love to claim that so-and-so is not racist and they're not racist, they just refuse to listen to Black people on racism. You know, to them, nothing is racist unless other white people verify that it's racist. And that in and of itself is racism. So, and I just noticed that we don't do this with other forms of bigotry, you know, like, when something misogynist happens, people don't go to men to try to verify whether or not it's misogynist. You know, when something homophobic happens, nobody goes to a straight person to verify whether or not it's homophobic. So anyway, I'm really glad that you put out new episodes, and I just wanted to offer my thoughts as a Black listener. So I love what you're doing. Keep doing what you're doing. I appreciate your work. And enjoy the kid.
Oh, and it cut off due to time. Gothic Intellect. Oh, so I guess formerly Gothic Intellect. That's the name, the handle that she used to come call in on. But I think now it was Highly Critical. So I think that's her YouTube channel. So check that out, everybody, if you haven't. I think it just cut off there. She just almost got through on that 3-minute deadline. But I think she meant to say, enjoy the kids, I'm guessing. Enjoy my kiddos, which I will do, and I try to do every day. Thank you so much. Great message. It was an older one, but it's one of those ones that I've had on my list. Like, oh, I need to play this, and I want to make sure I did. So thank you for that. I want to yes and you a little bit because, or well, actually, I disagree slightly in that I do think it's even worse than you say, that people do look to men to decide what's misogynist, and they do look to straight people to decide what's homophobic sometimes. I think from my experience, that can be a thing that happens as well as what you're saying. But I also wanted to say sometimes they do the opposite, in that if they can find one Black person who says this isn't racist, or one gay person who says this isn't homophobic, or one woman who says this isn't misogynistic, they seek that opinion out, which you can always find, because you can find anything on the internet, you know, you really can. And they hold up that opinion as like, well, that means it's fine because I found this one person who's in this group who thinks it's fine. So that's another, like, I guess a yes and to what you're saying. That's another annoying thing that happens. But thank you so much for the message. That's awesome. And it stands for itself. And I think you put it very well. So where can we go from here? Well, I've got a couple on cancel culture here. Maybe I'll play that. Here's one that was a second take. There was a full voicemail and then they got cut off. And so they came back and just did a short version. I'll fill in some of that, but here it is here.
Hi, sorry. It's Matthew from New York again. I went too long. Basic question is, shouldn't we condemn deplatforming and canceling people, whether it happens on the left or it happens on the right as well? Isn't that a larger, shouldn't we treat it like it's an issue, whether it's, you know, it's not a question of volume. It's a question of, it's a tactic that I feel ices and silences conversations that people want to have, no matter how clunky they may be. Thank you. Enjoy your show. Appreciate the work you do. We'll talk to you soon.
And that was Matthew, I think he said in New York, I'm pretty sure. Thank you, Matthew. Appreciate it. There was more to the first part of the question, but I appreciate leaving the second one that just kind of condensed it. That's very helpful for show purposes. So if anybody else wants to do that, that's always an option. There's no like worry that you're calling too much. Do not worry. If you call and you leave a voicemail and you mess up, do not at all worry. You can always leave another one. You don't have to be embarrassed. It's okay. It happens to everybody. But that aside, I do want to clean something up. I think this is my fault. I think I was perhaps not clear enough in that episode on what I meant. The main message that I want to get through in cancel culture is that I first and foremost want to reject the right-wing talking point that this is a left-wing issue. And part of Matthew's original voice message is that he's talking about like, well, okay, but even if it's more on the right than the left, like even if you had, say, you know, 1,000 people are canceled for holding left-wing views and 200 people are canceled for holding right-wing views or whatever, isn't it still a problem that people are being canceled? You know, it's like, we don't want to just hold our standards to, you know, just the low level of the right, like we want to be better. And I do totally respect that view. I just want to first and foremost dismantle this talking point that this is some unique problem on the left. That's the main thing. I didn't mean to say that means it's not a problem. So it's that. So I want to be clear of that. And then I also want to say that a lot of this quote unquote cancel culture stuff is just another word for consequences. Or as a tweet that I happened to catch said, and this is a brilliant way of phrasing it, It's actually the invisible hand of the market. If you ask people on the right, oh, do you like the invisible hand of the market? They'd be like, oh, that's awesome. It's my favorite invisible hand of all of them. It's brilliant. It's great invisible hand of the market. Does everything. And then you point out, oh, that's actually the same as cancel culture. That is cancel culture. That's a bunch of people utilizing their free speech to say, I don't like this. Get out of here with this. But, you know, I'm actually going to pair this with an email I got from Tunde, who is somebody who always pretty much disagrees with me and emails me and opening arguments and Andrew a lot about stuff they disagree with me on. But it's okay. They're also somebody who, you know, they engage and I appreciate it. And they're not just trolling or anything. But they sent this ContraPoints quote that, I mean, maybe now's not a good time to be quoting ContraPoints, but it pairs well with this, and it's something to think about. So this is a quote they sent, and this was from some profile of ContraPoints. I don't know if it was the New York Times one. I can't remember, but it was one of them. And it says, quoting Natalie Wynn, I've done several videos that target the strategy or lack thereof of a lot of people on the left. There is rhetoric that's extremely alienating and off-putting. There's tribalism that makes it very difficult to get in. There's purity testing that pushes most people out. I think a lot of the way that leftist spaces work online is designed for 5% of people to be able to be welcomed by them. Meanwhile, right-wing groups are recruiting anyone who wants to get on board with the cause. I have to be cautious because if I tweet one thing critical of progressive movements, I get love bombed by all these right-wing people saying, you're so right, it's so awful that you have to deal with this. It's like they have a welcome committee for people who want to sign up for the far right, but on the left, you almost have to fight your way in, end quote. So you can, you know, that's Natalie Wynn's words. I think there is actually truth to that. I think there's a lot of truth to what she's saying, to be honest. And it might just be a structural thing. And it's so funny that this was very prophetic. I think this is a couple years old, this quote. And the very thing she just said also happened when she left Twitter. All those people on the right were like, look what they've done to Britney and leave Britney alone about someone they don't agree, you know. So this is a tough thing. And I don't have the answer for you, because a lot of progressive politics and progressive just thinking, and this is my opinion, a lot of it is in dealing with very harsh realities of how unjust a lot of things have been. And it's hard, and it is alienating. It's alienating to people of privilege to be told that they've caused problems, or that they've benefited from racism, they've benefited from these things. It is alienating, and I don't know what the answer is, because it's always going to be disproportionately easy for people on the right to be like, nah, come on over. The water's fine. As long as you say you're tired of these damn kids and their progressive stuff, then you're welcome. You're welcome no matter if you're like a literal Nazi or you're, like a moderate conservative commentator of some kind. You're all welcome. And it's just easier for them to band together and do that. But at the same time, as I say that, it is also true that there are different coalitions on the right, and there is actually a lot of right-wing infighting. I know it doesn't feel like it right now, but I think that when and if Trump loses in 2020, I think we're going to see it. We're going to see a whole lot of fighting on the right, and we're going to see a lot of people saying, you know, my right wing way is the way and your right wing way is wrong. And I think we will see it a little more. It still feels disproportionate. Maybe that's just an internet thing. You know, maybe when you're on a platform that's presumably, you know, more left dominated. So when people come in on these, on whether it's Twitter or whatever it might be, where it's like a left environment, it's easier for them to just put on the face of this welcoming face of like, hey, if you're, you know, where the right wing is just about disagreement. And we know they're full of shit. Like, we know that's not really real, but I think it's just an easier posture for them to take. But I think it's always going to be this way. I think it's tough, but I think what we can do is, you know, me, And you people listening, maybe if you agree with me, maybe don't. That's okay. We could just do our best to be more welcoming and forgiving to people who are wrong about stuff. And, you know, that has a line. That absolutely has a line, and we all have to find our line. And that doesn't mean, oh, well, we welcome Nazis just as much as anti-Nazis. No, not even close. Not talking about that. But I'm talking about people who are on the left, but maybe they've got some issues you disagree with them on. Maybe they're not understanding how these new pronouns might work or something. And we can do our best. And maybe this is something, I don't know, maybe something that cis people with the privilege of not having to deal with like gender dysphoria. Maybe this is something we can help with, where we can try to educate in a patient way that bears some of that burden for trans people who might not be up to it because of the stuff they're going through and because of how hard it is to frequently have to be explaining themselves all the time. Maybe it's that kind of thing, but maybe it's not that issue. Maybe it's a different issue, you know, where we can do our best to be a little more forgiving as long as somebody's more, you know, as long as somebody's on the left. Like, we can be more welcoming broadly to people who are on the left in ways that I think will try to counteract this a little bit. But a lot of it is, like I started off saying, a lot of it might just be that, you know, when you want to be on the progressive side of things and you want to be on the side that really just tackles and genuinely grapples with a lot of the historical injustices, it's going to be hard because mathematically, those injustices are perpetrated by majorities on small minorities, just speaking numbers wise. And so naturally speaking, that makes the math hard. It makes it so you've got a lot of people who might be inclined to just think, well, it's not my, I wasn't born then, or I have no part in this, and so I don't need to be held accountable for that. And it's going to be an uphill battle, and it just might be one of those things that we have to do our best to win. So I thought that was interesting. There you have it. Let's see where I think I can definitely squeeze in a few more here. I know I have another voicemail to get to or two. Ooh, I know. Actually, here's a good one. This is an email that I got that is very much directed just toward me. And indeed, Jamie would have no idea what this is about because it's about like other podcasts and atheists and stuff. And she's not really in those circles. So this is perfect one for me to tackle by myself. Here's an email with a title, very long title, by the way. I didn't even know you could do this. The title is, "Does it bother you that the other Puzzle in a Thunderstorm guys are willing to maintain friendly relationships with prominent atheists you've pretty much burnt your bridges with on principle grounds?" This is from Jack. And Jack says, and that's just the title. The body is, "Like, remember a few months ago when No Illusions went on Atheist Experience with Matt Dillahunty? Did it bother you that Noah was willing to do that after the way Matt handled the Lawrence Krauss situation? It really bothered me that he was willing to do that. I even considered canceling my scathing atheist patronage. And I think if I was someone close to him, I would have asked him not to go on the show beforehand. Did you ever consider doing that?" Okay, I want to say this, and I think Noah would agree. I'm about as close with Noah as you are, emailer. Like, Noah and I are, you know, we, you know, yes, we've met, we've hung out, but I don't really, we're not particularly close, and that's not any sort of, you know, like negative thing. It's just, we don't talk. I don't talk to Noah much, you know, we're not. So that's kind of it's inaccurate to say that I had no idea he was going on this beforehand. I couldn't have asked him beforehand because I didn't know about it. I don't really keep track of that, you know? So but at the same time, I'm not trying to dodge the question, because certainly this has been something that does bother me from time to time. Now, I think what's important in this particular question was, I think Noah, if I have my facts right, my memory correct, I think Noah went on before the whole issue over like trans athletes that really blew up and caused all of the like Atheist Experience, I think all the women like quit, oddly, you know, like disturbingly, they were like, "We can't do this anymore." And I think this was before that. Had it been after that, I think maybe it would have been enough to say something. Let me know if I have that wrong. So yeah, it's weird. I mean, I haven't really burned bridges, but have I burned bridges? Yeah. I mean, for my part, here's the thing that's frustrating about some of these thinky, talky, skeptic-y guys. like, say, Matt Dillahunty and Seth Andrews, I would actually talk to them anytime. I would talk to Matt. I would talk to Seth. I've offered to talk to Seth from time to time. We've engaged, and they're not actually good at doing it. They present themselves as these brilliant, you know, reasonable, the adults in the room, but they actually can't handle talking to someone like me for some reason. I don't know what it could. I mean, you can put it on me, but they don't. It's not as though they talk to other people who agree with me, but are just different in some way. You know, they don't. They don't talk to people who have my views. My views being that Matt Dillahunty. This is pointless history to get into, but the way he reacted to the Lawrence Krauss thing when the article came out about Lawrence Krauss and his abuse, Matt Dillahunty was scheduled to go on stage with Lawrence Krauss and Sam Harris that night. And they ended up that what happened was Lawrence Krauss dropped out because it was going to be too much of a distraction, or because I think Sam might have kind of nudged him out too, because Lawrence Krauss was going to be able to just respond to the article on stage. And they were like, well, we don't want to do that. So he didn't end up appearing. And Matt, if you go back and listen to it, it's in there. It's in the feed somewhere in Sam Harris's feed. Matt managed to make that all about himself and not even express an iota of sympathy for the victims or the people who were genuinely concerned with, like, hey, are you really going to go on stage with this abuser right now? He had no empathy for that, and made it 100% about him and about how people were like expecting him to respond too soon. And he was still on the flight and he didn't even know about, didn't spare a second for people who had legitimate concerns or for the victims of Lawrence Krauss. And it's just shitty, man. Like, I just hated it. And I commented, I don't remember how hard I went. You might remember. I don't really remember that much, but you know, and then as far as Seth goes, you know, I certainly wouldn't put Seth in that category. I think Seth, you know, I disagree with Seth Andrews a lot and on some pretty key things. I think he has a real blind spot in some ways. But I still talk to him. You know, I haven't the bridge is there on my side. I don't know if it's there on anyone else's side, you know, like my end of the bridge is maybe it's smoldering a little bit, but it's not burnt. I would talk to these people. I would say it sort of does bother me when, like, if people are still doing events with these people and don't challenge them, it does bother me a little bit. I think that when you talk about a show like Scathing Atheist, you know, it's in the name, they're still doing the atheism thing and they're still, atheism is still core to their existence. And for me, I don't think it is so much. So maybe it's a little easier for me to, like, just not care about alienating certain gatekeepers within atheism, you know, whereas they maybe for like job reasons have to be worried about like alienated certain listeners. I don't know. I'd have to go with a specific example, you know, because as I said, I don't track it that closely. I love Eli Bosnick with all my heart, but like we don't keep track of what each other's doing, really. We just like talking to each other on occasion, you know, about probably not even related. So it's hard, you know. I apologize if I should be, I don't know, keeping track of what everybody's doing more, but I just don't, especially since I don't care about atheism as much. It's just not high on my list of priorities. But maybe if there's some specifics that I'm forgetting about, I'm just so much more concerned with Trump and you know, and winning elections right now. Like, honestly, that's so much more important to me currently, that I've kind of forgotten some of this stuff. So I appreciate the email, but I don't really remember a lot of these details because it's been a while and I've got kids now and I've been thinking about a lot of different stuff, but doesn't mean I don't think they're important. They are important. It's not foremost on my mind. So that was a very long, convoluted answer, but I hope you can make something of it there. Okay, so that's it for my emails that I have. I think I have a voicemail here. This will be interesting. Here's a quickie that we can do. I will hit play.
Hey, Thomas. Longtime patron Alex here. I left a previous voicemail about the IDW's dumb name, and you didn't play it, and I think I'm starting to understand why, because it's becoming clear to me that you pretty much just associate the real dark web with child pornography and other sorts of crime like that. It's fine if you personally don't like the dark web, but I think it's your due diligence to mention one fact on the show, and that's that the flagship product of the dark web, which is Tor, the Onion Router, was largely funded by the U.S. government as a tool for dissidents in countries where they had to be concerned about their own government to be able to get news in and out of their country. And personally, I think there are plenty of us who have reasons to be concerned about widespread surveillance even within the U.S. When I hear the dark web casually associated with child pornography and written off, to me it harkens back to the arguments we kept hearing during the Bush years that if you have nothing to hide, then you shouldn't be concerned about widespread surveillance. So anonymity software is a great tool for crime, I'll admit that, and that's a bummer, but that's not what it's for. And I think if you want to make the argument that in order to prevent crime, the government needs to be able to conduct preemptive surveillance on us without any kind of warrant or anything like that, at least make the argument honestly or explain how you feel about digital privacy. But please don't just be casually dismissive of the concept of people wanting to protect their privacy.
Yeah, I don't know. I think you've read a lot into something. Look, I think you and I both know that I don't know much about the dark web. So, yes, sorry if I've said anything that led you to believe I wanted to mislead people on the dark web. Yeah, I mean, is there any... I think part of the nature of being the dark web would mean that it's hard to know what proportion of dark web interaction or commerce or whatever is like... legitimate stuff versus what's like child porn and the other weird, you know, hiring a hitman and stuff. I don't know. Like, is there any, do you have some sources that would give you numbers on that? You know, because I agree that there are situations and places and countries where you need to be anonymous for different reasons. Totally agree with that. The main point of making fun of the intellectual dark web's name is it's a really stupid name. It doesn't mean that I think everything the dark web does is stupid. It means that their name is stupid because for many reasons. I think, look, you might be right that maybe it was inaccurate to try to score the quick gotcha of like, hey, don't you know the dark web is for child porn, so you named yourself after that on purpose? Maybe that's wrong. Maybe that's wrong. Maybe that was a quick gotcha that, factually speaking, if you fact check the joke, wasn't quite accurate. Fine. I'll go with that because it sounds like you know more about the dark web than I do. I don't know. But that's not the only reason why the name is stupid. The name is stupid because the views that these people want to express, that they feel like they can't get out there, are just conservative views. They're just mainstream conservative views. It's so funny. It's like that old meme that's like, my conservative viewpoints are being silenced. And then someone asks, oh, okay, like which ones? Like that you want small government? No, not that one. Okay, that you want to, I don't know, spend money on the military? No, that you don't like taxes? No. Well, which ones? I think you know which ones. And the point of the meme is like, it's, yeah, I mean, the stuff that's being quote unquote silenced is actually just mainstream conservative stuff that, you know, on Fox News, they like to pretend like it's just some silencing of these very legitimate small government, whatever, just small conservative views. But what it is anti-politically correct, racist stuff that they want to be able to say. They want to be able to say racist stuff. They want to be able to say bad stuff about immigrants. They want to be able to say sexist stuff and all that. And they feel like they can't, even though they can, like they've proven that they can. They just can't do it without facing consequence. All this is to say, the intellectual dark web is not an intellectual dark web. It's, we are people who like to, and honestly, this is kind of, I don't know if this is a straw man or a steel man or both. I don't know. But it's essentially, we have a lot of liberal views, and I'll give them credit. Like, you know, the Weinsteins and Sam Harris have plenty of liberal views. They really do. Not Dave Rubin, not him. Not counting that, because that guy's a conservative dummy who has exactly three views that are like kind of libertarian that he pretends are liberal views and then is just a conservative hack otherwise. So don't count him. But if you're talking about maybe more legitimate intellectual dark web people who have more of a claim to being on the left, like those Weinstein brothers maybe Sam Harris, you know, Sam Harris has a lot of actual liberal views. So let's say we're talking about him. All that means is they have liberal views, and then they also have really right-wing views about race and about, like, Me Too. It's not a dark web, you know? Like, it's not... Nobody is stopping. They still have these massive platforms. They still make way more money than I'll ever dream of making. Like, it's just a fake thing that they think they're this persecuted minority who's been, you know, forced onto the dark web because when they express these views, it's just not true. It's just that they, yes, they disagree with liberals on certain things, and so liberals get mad at them on certain issues, but that doesn't mean they're forced underground. So that's why it's an absurd name, not just because, you know, like some crime happens on the dark web. But Alex, I probably didn't play that voicemail last time. I kind of remember it, but I don't remember all the details. I listened to all of them, by the way, but you know, for time and for other reasons, I don't get to them. Because I just don't have strong feelings either way. Like, yes, I think that anonymity is very vital in certain situations, but, you know, like for me personally, I don't care about it. I don't really engage in it. So I don't know. I don't have a lot of feelings on it. So don't read into my lack of knowledge or lack of saying something on a certain issue, or my jokes about the intellectual dark web as some like indictment of all of the dark web. So sorry if I gave you that impression. I didn't mean to. All right. I think we got one more. I'm just packing it all in. This is a bonus episode, and I could do this for patrons only, but I'm not going to. I'm going to do it for everybody, but you should go to patreon.com/seriespod so that you support the show. But this is my gift to everybody, and you can thank the patrons for making this happen. All right, here you go. One more.
Hey, Thomas, this is Hausdorff. I have been thinking a lot lately about how everybody is in their own bubbles, and we all kind of have a separate world that we view, and we talk past each other, and how that's a problem. And, you know, I've always thought a good solution to this is you need to make sure that you're not in your own bubble. You got to read not just news sources that you agree with, but things you disagree with. You should probably listen to their shows and, you know, these kinds of things. And, you know, this sounds great. In practice, I find I don't do it. I kind of worry that I put myself in my own bubble, but it's sometimes it's hard to to listen to stuff that you just that just drives you crazy. And the reason I was thinking about this today is I recently got a new phone, and part of the process of getting a new phone is setting up my podcast and seeing who I want to subscribe to. And I kind of surprised myself. I decided not to subscribe to Sam Harris's podcast. I used to be a patron of his, but I realized I download the odd episode of his here and there, and I never listen to them. It just drives me crazy. He always goes off on identity politics, and I can't take it. It's brutal. But then I worry, am I putting myself in a bad position where I'm going to be in my own bubble? I thought that was interesting. I thought you might have a take on it. And as always, I love the show, and thank you very much.
So I say this is a bonus thing and a gift for everybody, and then my answer is going to be very disappointing. I don't have an answer for you. I really don't. I just think in this day and age, when the dominant right-wing view, for now, under Trumpism is not something that you can learn more about. It just isn't. I'll give you Trumpism. Trigger liberals, make liberals mad, do stuff that pisses liberals off. That's all. There's nothing more to learn. I'm not in a bubble when I don't read Donald Trump Jr.'s tweets about owning the libs. It's I know it, you know? So like back, maybe during the Bush years, I agree with you. And I've had the same thought process. Hausdorff, I totally relate to what you're saying. So my tone is a little biting here, but it's towards Trumpers, not toward you. I have the same impulse where I'm like, God, I really should. Cause sometimes, you know, it is true. Here's one thing that if you're a lefty like me and you have a lot of lefty sources, you might miss things like certain unethical behavior done by Democrats, you know, or like, so you might miss things like that. Whereas Fox News is always laser focused on that. They're always, you know, they're always going to exploit everything. And a lot of times they're being unreasonable, but like a lot of times, you know, or sometimes at least they aren't. Like sometimes there are like blunders that Democratic politicians make that just do not get covered in liberal circles that do get covered on the right. So like you are missing that. I mean, I listened to the, I think it's called The Argument, the New York Times opinion podcast. And I know I just shat all over the opinion section last episode, but I actually do really like that podcast, mainly because I love Michelle Goldberg. But I do think Ross Douthat is the kind of Republican that I wish all Republicans were. You know, like, I don't agree with him on much. I vehemently disagree with him on a lot of stuff. But I think he's genuinely somebody who is interested in having real discussions and has his right-wing views, and he's not just doing it to make somebody else mad. Like, he just is a Christian conservative, and, you know, there is value to hearing his take, I think, in some ways, and so I do listen to that. And in terms of a news bubble, I will say this. I actually get my news from Google News. So somebody, if you want to tell me, like, that's super bad, I'm open to the idea, but I actually don't, I think it gives you everything you could want, because what I get is what happened, you know, so headlines of stuff that happened, and then all the different sources for it. So I can look at the New York Times version, I can look at the Washington Post version, but I can also see the most of the time hilariously awful Fox News headlines on it too. And if there's like a reasonable conservative take on it, I can also see it under the Google News headline kind of thing. So, you know, that's what I do. So I don't know. Am I in a bubble? Probably still. Yeah, like, we're all in some sort of bubble. And my podcast bubble is definitely leftist takes on stuff of different kind, like varying degrees of leftism. So I don't know. I just don't know. In this day and age of Trumpism, I don't know that there is a meaningful right-wing view that we need to even fucking worry about, because it's nonsense. Like, it is nonsense. Maybe if Trump loses and there's a big, like, civil war in the Republican Party and the Ross Douthats of the world take over, like, then we can talk, you know? Okay, I still disagree with them, but at least I can be more informed on their views, and it's a way for me to go forward. So that's my answer to you, Hausdorff. I hope that helped. I feel like you shouldn't feel guilty for not listening to Sam Harris anymore. I can't do it either. I did for a while, and I was in pick and choose mode, and sometimes I still will if he interviewed somebody I like, or just somebody that's like neutral, like some scientist or something. I still give it a listen, but whenever it's like, oh, I found a professor who hates the SJWs, let's talk about how they're ruining the way, I'm just like, nah, I've heard it. I know it already. I don't care. So that's my answer. All right. Thank you so much for listening. Hope you enjoyed this bonus episode. This was brought to you by the patrons. So please consider going to patreon.com/seriouspod and joining the ranks, getting access to bonus stuff, bonus episodes, bonus parts of episodes, bonus questions, all this stuff. And also the good, warm, fuzzy feeling knowing that you're supporting this show and what we're doing here. Jamie and I both bringing you this show week in, week out. Thank you to my patrons most, first and foremost, and listeners as well. And share the show if you enjoy it. And also thank you to the emailers and voicemailers. I think I'm caught up for now. So we'll give it another few weeks and see where we are. But thank you. This was a lot of fun, and I will see you next time.